All right, everybody, welcome to the Call It A Podcast. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lovewich. We're powered by CLNS Media. We're recording this episode Wednesday, May 22nd at 5:30 p.m.-ish. Lovewich, how you doing?
Good. Man, I didn't realize it was June, like, next week.
Yeah, it's a little scary, isn't it?
Yeah, we got Memorial Day weekend. Well, this is the weekend that starts off the summer, so you got to be a little bit excited, right?
Well, I'll say this, though. The Stanley Cup is so stretched out this year, and of course, this is our Stanley Cup preview episode. Mm-hmm. The Stanley Cup is so stretched out this year, it's going to make this next month really drag. So at least there's that. One thing I do want to point out before we get into it, the Bruins and the Blues. I started doing this show in January of 2017, right? Yes.
Yeah, 2017.
So that's three Super Bowls, a World Series, and now a Stanley Cup. This is the fifth championship preview for a Boston team we've done. 3-1 overall, and the only team we haven't represented is your Boston Celtics. So that was kind of a fun realization I had today. But anyway, let's get into the Cup, the Bruins and the Blues. That's the matchup for the first time since 1970 when Bobby Orr flew through the air. It's a popular matchup. Patriots, Rams back in 01. Sox have taken on the Cardinals twice. So there is a little bit of bad blood here, which is good. Because remember what we were talking about before the Red Sox World Series, Lebowitz? And even before the Super Bowl this past year, who do you want to play? I don't know. I mean, we talked about it. There might not be that bad blood. These teams weren't easy to hate. I think the Blues are actually going to be a pretty easy team to hate. And I think St. Louis is going to be a pretty easy city to root against for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think that's more it. I think it's the fan base. I was talking to a buddy of mine earlier today about this, actually. And I base my judgments on cities solely off of who their fans are and how they act. So, like, for instance, Philadelphia is trash.
Naturally.
And obviously, I know a ton of great people from Philly, so my theory does.
Do you?
I do. I actually
do. Really? Do you really? They're not necessarily going to listen to this episode. Do you really?
No, I actually do. So the theory doesn't hold up in that regard, but for, you know, competition's sake, yeah, I hate St. Louis. They have horrible fans, and Boston has been relatively successful against them, at least in the new millennium.
Well, no, even if you want to go back, the Celtics won a few series against the St. Louis Hawks, and we just talked about the Bruins and the Cup.
You also had, 47 and 67, didn't they play the Cardinals and lose to them?
Yeah, I'm sure that you know, there's a lot of people here still mad about the 47 World Series. 67 World Series, maybe there are still people mad about that. That's fair.
Probably.
47 World Series, maybe not as much. But so no, it's going to be it's going to be an easy team to root against. There's also the Gloria angle. Shout out to DJ Bean and Pete Blackburn and the whole thing they've done. I don't know if you've seen this on Twitter, just ripping the Gloria song from the Blues and giving the Blues their own version. Have you seen that?
I've seen it on Twitter. I haven't even bothered to listen to the song because I know
you've heard the song. You've heard the original song, Gloria.
I don't know if I have. Maybe.
I mean, every time I start, like, humming it to try to give you, like, an indication, I end up Victoria by the Kinks. So I'll pull it up. But, no.
Cecilia.
What's up?
Cecilia. I know I know other name songs like that.
Here you go. Lauren Branigan. Here you go.
Okay.
Let me fast forward a bit here.
Oh, of course.
You recognize that, right?
Yes. Yeah, of course. Yeah, and I think I've heard some spoofs on this. And that's their song, which is a horrible song.
That's what they play when they win, yeah.
Yeah.
But so it is kind of fun to sing along to. So what DJ Bean and Pete Blackburn did is they just kind of they said, this is now the Bruins victory song.
Yeah.
And all these Blues fans are super mad on Twitter. So DJ Bean put another song called Gloria that he's trying to give to them when they complain about it. And Lauren Branigan, who's been dead for 15 years, has a verified Twitter account. And has gotten involved in this, and it's kind of wild. So, but aside from that, there's a lot of good stuff going on. You know, David Backes up against his former team. You have a team in the Bruins who is kind of, you know, they're kind of buried by what the Penguins did because the Penguins have actually won a good number of cups. But this is the Bruins' third trip in the decade. That's pretty impressive. This is a team that, you know, I don't want to say is a borderline dynasty, but has been relevant, and they have some of the league's bigger names. They certainly have the bigger names in this series. And that's kind of where I want to start from an X and O's point of view. When I start to look at this, we'll talk about it. You know, no, let's talk about the layoff first. I want to talk about the layoff. Mm-hmm. How concerned are you that the Bruins, when the puck drops on Monday, will not have played in 11 days when it's only, what, 5-6 for the Blues?
I tend to think that having some time off, it might affect their goalie play. I think we'll find out game one. I know it's cliche to say, but you just never know how your body's going to react when you have like 11 days off. The positive of this layoff is, you know, Zdeno Chara will be healthy. A lot of these guys who have been battling injury will be healthy. They will be rested, ready to go. And maybe even Tuukka can benefit from that because he's played every single game in the postseason, hasn't had a day off, you know, in a month. So we'll see what happens. There's a pretty long layoff for the Blues as well, though. And so I don't think it's really an advantage to one team or the other. I think once you get over like 5-6 days,
yeah,
it's all the same.
And that's kind of what I was going to say. I think once you hit that day at 5 day mark, if somebody evens out, and the Bruins are having a scrimmage tomorrow night, Thursday night at the Garden. So I think that'll be good. That'll help. And I love that teams are doing this, by the way. The Blue Jackets did it. Remember when they had their layoff after their first round sweep of having these practices at the arena open to the public, $20 tickets, at least for the Bruins when it was. It's a great – more teams should do it. It's awesome. But, yeah, I am a little concerned about the layoff when it comes to Tuukka Rask because he's playing so unbelievably well. I'm not saying that he's going to come out and suck, but part of what goes into playing like that is you get in a rhythm. You're kind of doing the same things. You're repeating your routines. You're repeating everything you do, and it helps you stay locked in. Now, maybe Rask has been repeating his game day routines throughout this 11-day break. We've heard of players doing that. And, you know, he'll still show up to the practice facility every day, every other day, as if there were a game, and go through his usual pregame routines as if there were a game, and go out and get on the ice and treat the practices like they were games. It's possible, but it's still not a perfect simulation for what you're going to do. So I'm not saying Rask is going to be bad, but it's, you know, a guy who has traditionally been fragile, another obstacle for him to face. So that's where I'm concerned with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess
cautious. Let me use that word specifically, cautious.
Sure. I mean, this is the best hockey he's ever played.
Yes.
You could bring up 2013, which was a comparable stretch. I don't remember if there was a layover this long. I don't think there was. But this is the best hockey he's played in his entire career. So when you match that with the fact that you have 11 days to try to continue that level of play, you have to feel a little bit concerned, but who knows? Maybe he's in that zone. Maybe it's just him answering the call, and he knows the magnitude of these games he's playing in. I've never been in that position, but you'd like to think that he can try to pick it back up, and once the puck drops Monday night, he'll be back in ready to go back to business.
I mean, that's certainly what you have to hope for if you're the Bruins, especially because the goalie on the other side isn't half bad. Jordan Binnington, the 25-year-old, here's a guy that's going to get paid this offseason. He's a restricted free agent throughout the playoffs. He is 12-7. By the way, three more games for the Blues than the Bruins. Bruins have played 16. Blues have played 19, just for whatever it's worth. 2.37 goals against average. He stopped about 91% of shots. Does have a shutout, but, I mean, he was outstanding in that series against the Sharks. He struggled early, but he closed that series very strong. So you can kind of have the same conversation for him. It's a shorter layoff, but how's he going to handle the time off? Now you kind of have the opposites where Tuukka Rask has been at the focal point of one cup run. He's been through two cup runs because he was there even though he wasn't the starter. He was there in 2011. Whereas here on the other side, you have Binnington, who, again, is just 25. He hasn't had much of an NHL career. He barely had an NHL career, just one game going into this season. So, in that case, I do favor Rask when it comes to layoff because you're going up against a guy who's really never experienced anything like this.
Yeah, but I'd also argue that Rask is much more valuable to the Bruins because the one benefit
I think at this point, especially, and Bruce Cassidy said today he expects a low scoring series.
Yeah.
When you get to this level of hockey, the goalies, the most Bruce Cassidy, the way these teams play is expecting low scoring games. When you get to this point, every goal matters more because momentum shifts carry so much more weight. I think you can throw that out the window of which goalie means more to their team. Odds are this comes down to which, as most cup finals do, whichever goalie is better, their team's going to have a chance. So I don't know that you can say Rask is more important at this point. He's the better player, but I think when you get to this point, you throw that out the window.
Well, I say that just because I feel like the Blues defense has it's been maybe a little bit a notch better than the Bruins.
Okay, that's fair.
He's only faced like 27 shots per game, which is among the lowest throughout the playoffs for any team. So he's had a lot of support around him. We've seen it with the Bruins this entire postseason where they come out hot in the first period. In the second period, they crap the bed and Tuukka bails them out. But they just are always out of position. There are a ton of giveaways. And it has to come down to that goalie play. I don't think Binnington, I think he can rely on that defense more and more consistent play out of that team. I'm just worried about the Bruins' consistency through all three periods and whether or not they can limit the scoring chances for the Blues.
And by the way, it's 28 shots per game. Good number on that. 20. That's a great job picking that number up. Because Rask, and I will correct what I said earlier, I said the Bruins have played 16 games. It's actually 17. I miscounted one somewhere. Rask has faced 12 more shots in two less games than Binnington has. Did I get that right? Yes, Binnington has not faced a lot of shots. Rask has faced 10 more, but it's been through two less games. So he's facing a number more shots per game. And you talked about the defense. I want to go to the forwards now because what the Blues have done throughout this playoff run, they've really spread it out. And they certainly have their key guys, but nobody's really in the neighborhood of a point per game. The Bruins have Brad Marchand, who's over a point per game, and David Pastrnak, who's right there. And that's where I give the advantage to the Blues, where the Bruins have certainly had, I'd say every line has had their moment, their game or two stretch in this run where they've been hot. They haven't been able to put everything together at the same time. They've been good, but at times they've been forced to become predictable, right? You know what that first line's going to do. You know when they're going to roll that line out there because maybe that's the only line that's producing. Or early on, like against Toronto, early on against Carolina, fourth line, right, was the line that early on against Columbus, the fourth line was the line that you knew was going to get certain situations where the Blues have really spread it all out. So for me, with the Bruins, when it comes to the forwards, – I want to see every group producing equally, hopefully equally good, but not equally bad, obviously, but they need to have some stability up and down that roster. It can't be, you know, the first line is the only line that shows up for game one. The fourth line is the only line that shows up for game two, because they've been able to survive that. And you mentioned Tuukka Rask, he's a huge part of it, but against a team like the Blues that can roll four lines deep just as well as the Bruins can. Right. And we've seen how much of an advantage that can be when the Bruins go up against these primarily three line teams. You've got to bring all four lines if you're the Bruins. So that's what I'm looking at. How consistent can they be, you know, from skaters 1 through 3 to skaters 9 through 12?
Absolutely. And I think they have gotten some really good play out of that third and fourth line. And a lot of games,
I mean, the fourth line's a huge reason they're here. Absolutely.
Exactly. I mean, it's been the spark for a lot of the playoffs. But they've been responsible for a lot of those giveaways, as I mentioned earlier. And that's huge. Those are scoring opportunities, and that led to a lot of goals in the past. So you need that, especially when you're going up against a team like the Blues that, as you said, is so balanced. Do they have more talent than the Bruins? No. I don't even think it's close, frankly. But they have consistency, and they're hot. Again, this is a team, this has been a point that's been beaten to death. They were in last place in the Western Conference January 3rd. They're the underdog. It's the Stanley Cup playoffs. Anything can happen, and this is a team that is playing just as well. Maybe not quite as well, but they're on a streak like the Bruins are.
You don't get to this point playing poorly.
Obviously.
So one other topic I want to touch on is a lot of the times in hockey, I feel like hockey, maybe more than any other sport, you see players kind of live up to storylines, right? The idea of revenge games, bad blood, that kind of thing. It plays itself out. We all thought we were going to get Joe Thornton against the Bruins, right? And Joe Thornton in his quest for a cup, fine at age 30-something, having to go against the team that traded him to the city that he asked out on. And we were all kind of preparing ourselves for that storyline. Now, it's not as dramatic, but David Backes at one point looked like he was going to be a Blues lifer. He comes to Boston a couple years ago. He now has a diminished role, but he's a guy I'm going to look at and see, okay, this is a huge series for him. And he's acknowledged as much that this is going to be a big deal for him going back to his former city, playing his former team. He's still, you know, there are still guys on that Blues team that he played with. Can he raise his game to the next level? He's going to come out and show them something. The Bruins paid him. The Blues didn't. I think he's even said that, you know, if he could have finished his career with the Blues, he would have. I believe I've seen that quote. If I'm wrong, you know, don't quote me on it. But I'm interested to see what David Backus is going to do in this series. I want to see if he can get that game up to the next level, because the Bruins have been a much better team when Backus is a part of things. And I know he's been scratched at times in the playoffs, and he's not the player he once was. But for 4 to 7 games, if he can throw it back, that would be huge for Bruce Cassidy and this Bruins team.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who does provide an edge. And if you can get production out of someone like that, that's huge. You bring the emotional factor into it, the fact that he was with the Blues for a while, over 10 years, I think, or about 10 years. That's the kind of spark you do need. The reality is, when the Blues, that Cinderella story, I think, outmatches anything. And when he was on St. Louis, you're talking 3-4 years ago. So I just wonder.
Yeah, 2015-16 was his last year. He did spend 9 years. There's no luck out in the right. Yeah, no, 9 years.
So, I mean, when you consider that, maybe the time away plays a factor. Obviously, when you are with the team for 9, 10 years, whatever it is, that's going to add some emotion to it. But I don't think that feeling is mutual on St. Louis. And I think that if there were still some layovers, some players from that roster, and I'm sure there are, but probably not enough to make an impact. I think if there were, you'd be talking about that being a factor. I'm not looking for it. I think
you don't
maybe
think there's any sort of edge in going back into the old building and any of that.
Yeah, no, there definitely is. And maybe he can try to pull something from that. But by the time that's going to be game three, and you are going to be in the midst of the Stanley Cup. So I don't know. I don't think you need it. I don't think you need it. I think everyone's kind of amped, and the emotions of just getting there are probably overwhelming in and of itself.
That's true. And I mean, it's his first trip to the Cup Finals at the age of 35. He's been playing professional hockey since he broke out with the Blues in the 06-07 season. So, I mean, it's been a road.
It's definitely an added factor for him specifically. And you talk about those bottom lines trying to contribute more. And, you know, he's not a guy who's going to be on the ice a ton. But if he can be that fourth or third line guy who can give you some solid minutes on the ice, some solid shifts, I mean, that's huge. That's huge. And I do think it's probably a factor for Cassidy and who he's going to address.
All right, Cassidy, real quick. The job he's done turning this team around post-Claude Julien has been excellent. How much of this is on him? How much of this turnaround? Are the Bruins at this point if Claude Julien is still the coach or if somebody else is the coach?
I don't know. I think it's a completely different coaching philosophy. So I don't think this team would be nearly the same. I don't think they'd be trusting their young guys like they have. Obviously, that was one stain on the Claude Julien years and Peter Chiarelli years. So I you got to commend him. I mean, he got this team to the Cup, and they've been the favorite since the second round, in part because the Flames and the Caps were bounced out early. But still, they've been the top dog for a while now, and that's in no small part because of Bruce Cassidy. He's been huge. He's been huge for the Bees, and he definitely has a lot of job security. Who would have thought that at the end of this season, if you go back to November, October,
right,
that Bruce Cassidy would have more job security than Brad Stevens?
I think you could argue right now he's the number two coach in Boston. I really think he is. In terms of, you know, results, it's probably an easier argument given where the Red Sox are at, and we know what the Celtics did. I think in likability, too. I mean, I don't know if you heard him on Tucker and Rich this morning, or really any interview he's given, he's very straightforward.
He's honest. I love it.
Right. He doesn't say things that management wants him to say or what he knows the fans want to hear. And part of it, I think, is just that's the hockey mentality.
Oh, yeah.
But, no, he's straightforward. He's honest. He's up front from all accounts. He's the same way behind closed doors as he is openly in the media. So I think he could be, you know, a long-term – when he came in – he was kind of supposed to be a holdover, right? A transitional coach until they could go out to the Boston Bruins. You'd think they should have a big name. And this is – I'm not having this realization now. I realized this a while ago, but just to put it out there, I mean, he's going to be – he should be, if he can keep this up, the coach of the Boston Bruins for a long time, because he has done a fantastic job this year. Lebowitz, any other thoughts on the series? Anything else we didn't get to talk about?
I think we hit on it all. I'm just excited. I'm
excited.
Do you
want to complain about the 8 o'clock starts at all?
I mean, that definitely sucks. I'm going to deal with it though. Here's the reality: is I've been staying up Sunday nights already for Game of Thrones.
Yeah, but this is 3 days a week.
But it's going to be 2 weeks. I'll get over
it.
You know
then you don't have to worry about it until September.
Exactly. And you know, now that I've survived the MLB playoffs doing morning radio, I feel like I can survive anything. So
okay.
I bring
that's a good
it on.
Point. That's a good point, because that's almost every day. All right, final thoughts for this episode. Lebowitz, go ahead.
Let's do Game of Thrones. We did it last week, a preview. I'll do a little reaction.
Preview, right? I'm trying to remember what you said.
I actually listened back to it today to check. It was pretty much right. So what I predicted, spoiler alert, was that Dany would die. She did. That Jon Snow would go to the north, which in a convoluted way he ended up doing. Sansa would be the queen of Winterfell, and that they wouldn't have like a ruler of the Seven Kingdoms. Bran is the king, but they don't have like someone to rule everyone. They don't have a tyrant. So I think I was right for the most part. I don't like the way they got to that point. It was just a rushed season. It was so rushed. The dialogue stunk. I feel like a broken record, but it really did bother me throughout this season. I was pumped. I binged this show for like over a 2 month span. So I was really into it, and you can kind of see it deteriorate last season, and this season it's just like they had no idea what they were doing. So for that reason, Breaking Bad is the best show of all time. That's number one on my ratings.
Have you seen Sopranos? I'm just curious.
I've seen the first season. I need to continue watching.
So Breaking Bad's a great show, but part of the reason I put The Sopranos over Breaking Bad is that, and you'll understand when you watch this, it's not really a spoiler, but Breaking Bad doesn't exist without The Sopranos. It's just kind of everything that Breaking Bad did, it was able to do because The Sopranos existed. So in that sense, I feel like you kind of have to give the – also, the ending for The Sopranos, I know it's controversial. Amazing. I've heard mixed things. You will, because everybody loves it or hates it. There's a thread on Twitter by – I forget who. It's one of the guys at ESPN. He has a theory about it, and once I read that, I was like, oh, that was the perfect ending. I also like the How I Met Your Mother ending, and I think I'm the only person on the planet who did.
I hate that show.
It's a great show. You're so off base on that. You need to watch it again. It's a great show.
And that's the one thing about Game of Thrones. There's pretty much a consensus that the final season wasn't good. I like the battle between the living and the dead. I really did enjoy that episode. That was by far the best episode of the season.
Let me ask you this, because I know that they started based off the books, the George R. R. Martin books, and then they kind of had a transition because the books weren't written and they had to come up with their own stuff. Was that transition – when did they run out of material from the books? Was it just
after season six, I believe.
Okay. And I've heard season 7 and 8 were bad, were the two worst.
Season 7 was definitely better than season 8, but there was a clear drop-off. And then season 8, it's just like these actors want out. We can only do 6 episodes. That's what their contracts are for. Let's try to rush all this in with the most general dialogue we can possibly imagine.
If the shortchange was the actors' contracts, the actors shouldn't be getting mad at people for hating the ending. I'll just say that.
Absolutely. The person to direct your anger towards is George R. R. Martin, who just takes, 20 years to write one of the books.
He's writing one of the best South Park episodes, by the way.
Oh, it's great. Wieners. My friends get really mad when I do that when we start watching the show. He's writing the ending, I'm pretty sure. He's writing another book for Game of Thrones right now. So they'll have a separate ending that he'll write. It's probably going to be phenomenal because everything
– the same ending.
No, he's not going to do that. He's definitely not. Maybe he'll do a similar ending, but it will be in a much more interesting way and more to the standard of season 1 through 6. I'm going to go back and watch the entirety of the series again one of these days, but I'm going to need some time. It is unbelievable television, and I think it speaks volumes that people stuck it out for 2 seasons of mediocrity simply because they, fell in love with the character arcs and the plots and just wanted to see what the finished product was.
So my final thoughts actually also going to be about a TV show. It's also going to be about an HBO TV show. Have you watched the Chernobyl miniseries?
I did. I watched the first episode. I think that's all it's out right now.
So you just watched the first.
Is there another episode out?
There's 2 more out.
Oh.
So they're 3 in out of only 5 episodes, which sucks because it's really good. And like, it's the perfect mix of like historical fiction and drama. And there's like even a little bit, not like comedy, but like, there's levity in it, I think would be the best way to put it. And it is not only – like you know what happens Right. I know what happened to Trinidad. Not all the nuts and bolts, but I know the general of what happened. I've read the Wikipedia page. And they still make you hang on every word, like, what's going to happen? And so not only is it an entertaining TV show, the visuals. Oh, my God. The way that they dress the whole thing up. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to figure out how to do this without spoiling it. But there's some, like, visual effects. I didn't even know were visual effects. They were real, and I went back and I read about the episode, and it was a visual effect. And then the best one, honestly, they should win a number of Emmys, but they should absolutely win an Emmy for this, is when you see, like, the firefighters and the people who were working at the power plant the night it exploded, and you see them in the hospital, like, when they're, like, at the end, and the way they made the bodies look to resemble, like, what you would look like after getting that dose of nuclear radiation, oh my, like, I almost threw up. But it's, like, you want to see it.
I know what I'm doing when I'm done with this episode.
No, it's not for the faint of heart, but, like,
oh, yeah.
So the one downside to it, because let me throw this out there, because it's a major downside. Like, great show, absolutely watch it. The one downside, you have these great actors in it. Stellan Skarsgård, he's Robin Williams' friend in what's the name of the movie? Good Will Hunting. Right, he ends up being the psychiatrist or the therapist.
The professor who brings Will to him.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's in it. He plays a guy from the Russian government. There's a number of good. He's the only one I know off the top of my head, but there's a number of good actors.
Yeah, the guy from Dunkirk is in it.
Right, they're all British because it's co-produced by the Sky Network, which fine, whatever. But they're all using British accents.
Well, I was literally going to bring this up.
Super non-immersive because they're talking about, like, the West and what are the Americans in the – like, when it first explodes, they don't realize that the reactor exploded and they feel the shake. They're like, did the Americans attack? Did the British attack? And I'm like, you're British! Like, yeah. Look, I don't want them speaking Russian with subtitles. That would be a pain in the ass. But they're good actors. Do a Russian accent. Like, two or three people do, and I commend them for it. But – Mikhail Gorbachev speaking like the Queen of England is so unimmersive and takes you out of it.
Yeah, it's very high pitched too.
The one critique on the show.
I was actually gonna bring up the same thing, and I feel like this isn't just Chernobyl. There are a lot of movies that are historical dramas in which it's a non-English speaking country, but for some reason it's British people who play the characters. And I think it's because it's foreign and they want to give us the foreign feeling.
And I get that. And I'm fine with that. But can British actors not do a Russian accent?
It's not that difficult. But this is also a reason why I like
it. It's not that hard, comrade.
Yeah, exactly. And this is why I like the show Narcos, because they do subtitles. And I don't mind reading the subtitles because you are immersed.
I don't want subtitles.
Have you not seen Narcos, though?
I don't need – I've seen some of the episodes. I know I need to watch it.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
But that's part of the reason I can't finish it. I don't want to read for 3 hours. Oh,
it's so worth it.
I want to be like – like when I watch TV to shut my brain off. I don't watch TV to think, like, Chernobyl's kind of in between there, but I can still do whatever on my phone while I'm watching Chernobyl, right? I can take in what's happening. I can't take in what's happening if I need to read effing subtitles.
Well,
maybe every once in a while for dramatic effect, sure. Not full episodes. I'm not doing that. I don't have time for that. I don't have the patience for that. You can take that artsy crap and do it on your own time. I'm not doing that.
And it's funny because people who know how to speak Spanish were thrown off because the guy played Pablo Escobar apparently is Brazilian, so his native language is Portuguese, and his Spanish wasn't very good. So, like, there are some positives and negatives. If you know how to speak the native language and they're doing it, it might throw you off a little bit. But still worth it. Amazing show. I still love the guy who played Pablo Escobar. He was phenomenal. But with Chernobyl, same critique. I was literally going to bring that up. And this is like The Pianist. It's the same thing. It's World War II Poland, and they're all speaking in British accents.
Right.
It's not what it was like. they didn't have British accents back then. And you could do an Eastern European accent and still
speak
English.
Right, it doesn't have to be specifically Russian. Like, just something that sounds Eastern Bloc, and we get the point. But
Exactly.
Again, it's a little unimmersive, and it does make it feel a little older than it actually is, which part of – and it kind of hit me when you get to the third episode. You realize, like, just how recently this happened.
Yeah, this is the 80s. People think it's the 60s.
Right. It's not some, like – you know, you kind of think of it as – you know, basically everything USSR, you think of the USSR as stopping after World War II. And I know that's when it technically started, but you don't, you know, the Cold War and all that, 60s, 70s. And it makes a lot of good allegories to today's political climate and things going on in today's world. So when you realize how recent it is, it's very interesting. So you've only seen the first episode?
I've only seen the first. I thought that was all that was out. So,
there's three out. It's every Monday. If you have time, watch the next two tonight or whenever you watch the next two, text me, because I want to get your thoughts. And maybe we'll bring it back. Maybe not next episode, but once they're done, once we've seen all five, maybe we decompress on it. I think that might be a nice little follow-up to do for Final Thought.
100%.
All right. So we'll do that down the road. We will have our next show at some point. Kind of tough to – there's really nothing – I mean, I know the Red Sox are going on, but there's nothing huge happening between now and the Cup starting. There's a week of Pat's there's a Pat's OTA on Thursday. So we'll figure it out. We'll keep
– maybe something big with the Red Sox happens maybe, but
if something big with the Red Sox happens, we'll definitely get an episode out. We'll keep you posted. Just make sure you're following us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast, and you can always check for new episodes on clnsmedia.com. Click the podcast tab, scroll down to Calling It. It's the blue square with the microphone in. All right, so that'll do it for us this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Enjoy the beginning of the Stanley Cup. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend.